is... Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politics.
Politics. Hey, Ta. Welcome to Wow, What a Week, hashtag Politics. This week, we remember the life and legacy of liberation struggle stalwart Ntate Thera Lekota. We unpack how tensions in the Gulf are affecting global markets and ask why deadly building collapses keep catching government off guard. We also look at possible collaborations between MK Party and the ANC in KZN. The SANDF are about to be deployed from March until March. And we'll also look at a DA minister's travel with a partner. All of that and a whole lot more on Wow, What a Week, hashtag Politics. My name is Fresh, his name is Botsang, and you are welcome.
Good morning, Fresh.
Oh, grand.
Good grand, everyone, and morning to the viewers and followers.
Yes, sir.
In a war-torn world. You know, the war is not only in the Middle East and the Gulf. It's in the whole world. But yeah, there's been a very busy, hectic week, both domestically and geographically. From east to west, things are happening.
Ntate Lekota has left us.
Yes, sir, sadly. Yeah, one of my favorite politicians in South Africa.
What was it about Ntate Thera that made him a cut above many?
You know, I've listened to many messages of condolences that came. And, you know, the one that caught me most is what I also believe and have known him for. It's how all political parties, all, have said in one voice how he was a gentle giant, how he was an upright person, how Ntate Lekota was not afraid to tell the truth and to even confront and or differ with some of his own comrades and political leaders. But for me, being you know, a black consciousness and Pan-Africanist person, I think what I was fond about is the manner he managed to be still a believer of black consciousness, yet he was in the African National Congress, which believed in the Freedom Charter, and how he maintained that stature as a product of a comrade or former comrade of, you know, Stephen Bantu Biko, because those were the first bunch of students who worked with Biko during the era of Biko, despite the fact that he was in Tafelkop and Steve Biko was at the Medical University of Natal. But how he groomed Ntate Thera Lekota and other young ones who came out of the Black Consciousness and the University of the North, which is known as Tafelkop. But the highlight also is when he contested for the chairmanship of the African National Congress in the year 1996, if I'm not mistaken, a conference. And he became the chairperson of the ANC under the presidency of President Mbeki.
Yes.
And then the Minister of Defense. One thing politically that I, you know, it was under Ntate Musiwa Thera Lekota as the Minister of Defense when he introduced, I think the country is still indebted to him, when he introduced more female personnel into the high echelons of the South African National Defense Force. It was under his ministerial leadership. So those are some of the things that one can take, you know, besides also being the first premier of the Free State Province in the democratic dispensation. And with the difficulties in the Free State, first of culture, second of race, the language, and also Free State bordering Lesotho with all the troubles that he inherited from the apartheid era. I think he managed the Free State very well. That's why the promotion to become a national minister, and subsequently, sadly, he had to leave the African National Congress during the departure or the recalling of President Mbeki. He was very close to him. He tried, if you recall, Fresh, he tried during that time to bring unity as the then chairperson of the ANC. You know, if you're a chairperson, you are seen as a unifier, as a glue that holds the factions together.
Yes.
But unfortunately, when that did not work, he went to form Congress of the People, COPE, Sam Mbazimashilowa. And their fallout, again, I want to think that the fallout of Ntate Lekota and Ntate Shilowa, it's because of their strong characters. They had both the similar characters, very principled people who believed in what they believed in. But yeah, you know, liberation-wise, up to government until his departure days, he was a great man, you know. And I think South Africa can do is to be thankful that we have had a political leader like Ntate Lekota who really lived by his weight. He did things for the people. And I'm trying to sit and try and find something where he has been in the bad light, a negative aura about him, and I couldn't find anything.
He was a founding chairperson of the NCOP. Why is the NCOP important in the bigger scheme of South Africa?
Because the National Council of Provinces, together with the National Assembly or Parliament, they form the Assembly, the National Assembly, Parliament, and the NCOP is very important. And when he was the chairperson, it was after his stint as a premier. It is because that's where the connection with the grassroots and the masses are.
Yes.
And then the National Council of Provinces is where also the needs, the demands, and the challenges that provinces have are coordinated in order to be presented and or approved in parliament. So the NCOP actually, it may be undermined because it's not on the news, you know, or in the eyes and ears of the people. But that's a very, very important legislative body or part of the legislation. Any act of parliament, when it's still a bill, before it's passed in parliament to become an act, it first has to go to the National Council of Provinces.
To ensure that every province has proper representation.
Has proper representation, they've contributed. Because we have situations in South Africa, some things that affect KZN. Let me talk of a negative thing. Floods in KZN. The people of, for example, Free State may not experience the floods, or the Northern Cape. So the input and contributions of various provinces into the legislation, giving inputs into the government policies are very important. And even there, he led with such, you know, it's a very difficult position, especially that, as I said, it's not in the limelight. The public doesn't see the important role that the NCOP plays in our lives. That's where municipalities deposit their needs to national government.
Sure.
They deposit them there, they deposit to the provincial leadership, then that accumulates and being taken to the National Assembly, where they are approved, whether it's budget or financial requests or laws. Sure. And I think I had actually forgotten about that role, that big role that he played in the country. So he had occupied very strategic roles that are very key to the people.
Cooperative governance would not be as smooth without an NCOP.
Exactly, exactly.
Because then who's representing the provinces?
The provinces, yes.
You know, whether it's comes to new legislation, to budgets, etc.
Yes.
Or provincial needs even.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And for other things that I like, it is robust way of telling things.
Yes.
You remember the incident where he spoke about when they were arrested and he ended up spending almost 10 years, if not more, Tevlop.
Oh, yes. He blamed President Ramaphosa. He says President Ramaphosa sold them out and accused them of planting communist ideas in their heads.
You know, what I like is the way he put it. And that's recent, by the way. That is, this was last year in July.
Yes.
When President Ramaphosa invited other political parties during a State of the Nation address to come and form the Government of National Unity. And Mr. Musiwa Lekota, Ntate Lekota stood up in parliament and said, no, I'm refusing. I am not going to allow you to invite me to form a government of national unity. And I think that was very bold because a lot of small parties with one or two seats, they fell for that invitation. It was an opportunity for them to win government. But to show that he was a principled person, he refused to betray his political beliefs of working, for example, with the Democratic Alliance in forming government, of working with President Ramaphosa, that he accused, he said to him, I'm still waiting for you to explain to me and to invite me and explain to me why did you sell us out, in his words, the apartheid regime and police, when they were all arrested at Tevlop and they were taken to Pretoria Central Prison. And when they were there, the rest of them were sentenced to Robben Island. and only President Ramaphosa, or Mr. Ramaphosa at that time, because he was a political activist, was led to go home. And Ntatele Kota went out to say, you know, in parliament and in public, when their papers were read in court, it was found that in the statement of, because they had to be given statements of other parties,
yes,
or allegations or court records, that the testimony, one of the testimonials that were found is that Mr. Ramaphosa had informed the police that Ntatele Kota and others, they planted communist ideas.
Yes, they were planting communist ideas in
their heads. And remember, communism was treasonous in the apartheid government. And they were sentenced to Robben Island, except the president. Sadly, he had gone down the grave without us seeing any papers or hearing the truth. But President Ramaphosa obviously and logically denied that. He said that he doesn't know what is he talking about. And I always tell people the best way to deny things is to say to people, I don't know what you're talking about. Then you leave the alleger to provide evidence. But yeah, let the tower rest in peace.
Absolutely.
To the family of Ntatele Kota and the followers, the members of COPE and South Africa at large, there's the man that I think he deserves a statue in the Free State or anyway, or in the military. I wouldn't mind if they erect a statue.
Why are you talking about statues all of a sudden?
Because we are reigning statues, you know, and I'm so upset, Fresh. It is hardly 2 years when the late Minister Natim Tetwa,
yes,
as the he was the Minister of Arts, Sports
and
Culture,
yes.
He wanted, you remember the halabaloo about
erecting
a flagpole that was at about 100 meters and was costing millions of rands, and President Ramaphosa, as an election campaign, because that was just before the 2024 elections, President Ramaphosa stood up and said, hey, I told Natim Tetwa not to do that. Just forget that poll. Then he goes and he opens erected statues of former President Nelson Mandela and the leader of the African National Congress, O.R. Tambo, in Durban, with the reasoning. And that's what I'm mentioning. That the reasoning they gave was tourism. To say having those statues there, they want to attract tourism to Durban.
But people are going to Durban anyway. They're not going to go there because there's a statue.
For example, I'm a South African and Durban is my favorite seaside place, you know, unlike other people like Cape Town. No, but and how many statues of, or why would I fly to Durban or travel to Durban to see a statue of Madiba and O.R.? O.R. Tambo Airport, when there's the most beautiful and the closest to the look of O.R. Tambo. Then you go to around the corner here in Sandton, there's Mandela statue. And all over Mandela statues, there's a portrait of Nelson Mandela behind me here. But also tourists from overseas. If you want to claim that it will attract them, tourists won't go to a destination because there's a statue. They will go to a destination for many other reasons. If statues are there, they will visit that statue. But look, it is important to honor, respect, and recognize our leaders or people who have contributed, not only political. It could be cultural. You know, I'm still feeling very sad of how the Republic of South Africa, we are not recognizing Memire Makeba because she never held a political title while she was literally a political activist.
Yes.
She was exiled because of his political, this music was political. She was never given those honor except at a very late stage of her life. She became a cultural ambassador, honorary ambassador sitting at Derrico. Why are we not having those statues? Understand? It's I don't want my kids to grow up and be what I've been through. When you know when first did I see Miriam Makeba play in life? You won't believe. It's actually embarrassing. It was in Stuttgart, Germany. When I saw Miriam Makeba first, because I was stationed there and she was performing there. And when I told Germans that I'm seeing Mama Miriam Makeba for the first time in my life, they couldn't understand. How come when you are a South African?
Exactly.
And so it's some of the things that we are not paying attention to.
Hey, but President Ramaphosa says, why are we paying attention to the price tag and not to the price paid by Bontate Tambo le Madiba?
The price, in my view, paid by O.R. Tambo and Nelson Mandela, it's unmeasurable. There's no value to it. It's beyond the price. But I think as a nation, if we could be doing things that Madiba and O.R. would have loved to see, would appreciate. Mandela, when he could have amassed millions, He had the children foundations, sponsored building schools and hospitals. That's what we must be doing in order to honor them. A province like KwaZulu-Natal, which is improvised and has challenges and problems, you go, you build a statue, or you erect a statue with, they're not in the same place, but costing 22 million. You know, with 22 million, we could have built a low-cost classrooms for children in rural areas of KwaZulu-Natal. Mm. We could have cleaned the sewage system that is polluting the ocean and the sea. In KwaZulu-Natal, in that same province, we could have used that 22 million towards, you know, alleviating the challenges that we are in autumn, we are in a rainy season in KwaZulu-Natal in South Africa now, and we know what's going to happen. There's going to be floods. People are going to die. Use that 22 million towards it. Build clinics that people must not travel from far rural areas. I think you can have, with 22 million, you can have 4 at least mobile clinics.
I'd even go a step further and say, if we want to honor these two great men, then maybe hold ourselves to the same standard they would have held themselves in terms of ideals and what they stand for. And maybe even ask yourself, would they have erected a statue for that amount of money for any other person?
For any other, Look.
Or would they have justified erecting a statue for any other person?
Was a political figure. He was never in government. Was a political figure in this country, like many others, like Stephen Bantu Biko, like Robert Mangale Sosobu, and many other political leaders. That the Mandela himself, he actually would have said to them, rather take that money and build a clinic or build a school. That's how we can honor them instead of erecting statues. And the president goes, and this, you know, I think that's why I should criticize President Ramaphosa fiercely, and says and announces during that event that the SADC Council of Heads of States, whatever, its summit, it's coming to South Africa, and he has announced that it will go to Durban, and he's going to accompany the visiting heads of states from the 15 member states. Okay, it's 14 member states of SADC. He's going to accompany his 14 members. And obviously, you know, these African leaders, whenever you go to South Africa, they come because they can shop and they go to nice places to go and do a photo shoot at the stage. What value add will it do to us as a nation? What value add will a head of state from Mauritius want to go and have a photo with a statue of Ntate Mandela? I mean, come on, guys. We are a nation that's troubled by budgets, by the fiscal is strained. And we still go, I don't say statues are not important, but I'm saying we could have done other things that are more important and in service delivery to the people. There are children in KZN fresh. There are children in KZN who sleep, who go to bed on empty stomachs. I would have create a school of culinary where you can teach children to cook for the community and feed themselves.
Yes.
Support the farming projects that people can feed themselves. And name those farming projects against O.R. Tambo or Nelson Mandela.
Also, I mean, with respect, Ntate Tambo le Mandela have been honored all the time.
All the time.
Even in other countries. Yes. You'll find a Madiba road or a drive or a freeway or a highway. They're honored all the time.
Exactly.
So surely if there's budget for statue, then where's Sobukwe? Where's Biko? If there's budget for...
To honor our liberation struggle heroes.
Hey.
And yeah, but it's, for me, really, I don't think we should ignore our cultural background and historical. But if it's not fair, if it's not balanced, and also against what? We want to do cultural issues that are not adding value. I'm not convinced that a stage will increase the volume of tourism to KZN. Now, I've been in that industry for many years of my life. Not the statues, something else.
Let's move on to another president. Former top prosecutor Anton Ackerman has testified that President Mbeki's administration orchestrated a deeply unlawful moratorium on TRC prosecutions, effectively creating a backdoor amnesty for apartheid-era perpetrators. At the Kampepe inquiry, Ackerman alleged political interference, secret negotiations, and policy amendments that paralyzed investigations and shielded suspects, calling it a Machiavellian strategy that sacrificed justice for political convenience.
Yeah.
This is big.
It's big and it's sad. It saddens me. Actually, when we spoke about it on 938 Radio during the course of the week, I didn't read in depth, because you introduced the topic, I didn't read in depth the statement of Anton Ackermann. But before I go far, this Anton Ackermann, is he related to the Ackermann family? Fresh, is he part of the Ackermann family? No, it's just the surname. Because you know that the main Ackermann is Antonich Ackermann as well.
Yes.
Anyway, you know, Fresh, why is this big? There has been allegation, just for the benefit of the viewers who don't know what we are talking about. There is a former justice, retired justice, Mayor Sisi Kapembe, that President Ramaphosa has appointed to chair a commission of inquiry. We spoke about it on this platform about a few months ago, to chair that commission of inquiry. We remember we called it a commission to check why the other commission resolutions are not implemented. So many of the people will know that in the mid-90s, President Mandela instituted the Commission of Inquiry, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which many people in the world have hailed it for a country like South Africa to come with a TRC. That was chaired by the late Emeritus Bishop Desmond Tutu. Now, the issue here, for the benefit of the followers and the viewers, is that there has been complaints, especially from the black people's side, of families that lost their loved ones to the apartheid regime, brutal police. There's been an outcry that the recommendations of the Truth and Reconciliation Committee, chaired by Ntate Bishop Tutu the late, were never implemented. And there's been back and forth in the country why they were not implemented. There were people who went beyond the call for duty to keep black people outside the country. They implemented atrocities, murdered people, buried bodies alive. Some families haven't even recovered that. And some of those white policemen, and some were even scientists, they even went to an extent of doing things beyond what their leadership said they must do. You know, we can speak of the voter bassons of this world, who was called Dr. Death, and the other guy who led, Eugene de Kock, who led the notorious Flag Plus. Now, these families, and some of them are families of prominent ANC, actually not even ANC, Liberation Movement leaders, very prominent, that the cases never happened. And we've been asking as a nation for many years. Now, this commission, it's revealing things that actually the witnesses who are testifying at the Kapembe Commission, because I'm following it very closely, some of the witnesses, they actually, or not even some, most, they're giving a clue, a lens clue of how it was the new government. And not only the testimony of Anton, Ackermann, even others, that during the President Mbeki's era, there were concerted efforts to make sure that the white people who committed atrocities of murdering and against the United Nations Charter, against the policy of the country, who were supposed to face prosecution, they never faced prosecution, because there were people in President Mbeki's admin who were thwarting the efforts. And Mr. Anton Ackermann is one of the leading prosecutors in South Africa.
So
he's old. He's 77 years old. He just came out of a heart surgery to come and testify at the Kapembe Commission. And his testimony for me is very damning.
It is.
It is damning. You know, to say, he mentioned prominent people, President Mbeki, former Minister of Justice, the late Mayor, I just forgot her name, he was a lady Minister of Justice. He mentioned Ntate Jekisi Lebi, and says the prosecutor and the police, the former police minister, is saying the National Prosecuting Authority was even left out of the decisions to prosecute the perpetrators of apartheid. And families of people are asking, because some families, Fresh, they haven't recovered and seen the bodies of their loved ones. Some, they don't know what happened to their loved ones, and they want the truth and closure. But it baffles me, bro, that why would, you know, I've got a lot of questions myself. Why would President Mbeki, that his own family, friends, and father, I know that, for example, one of President Mbeki's brothers passed on when he was in exile. He couldn't even come and bury the brother. Not because of killed by apartheid, but if you have been through that, if apartheid denied you an opportunity to even come and bury your own beloved brother, you should be knowing and you can relate to the pain that these families are going through. But politically, this is where I'm saying, can the government please, before it's late, tell us what did the sunset clause entail? Because for me, it looks like it was part of the CODESA agreement and the sunset clause to say you will not touch our generals, our police, our DGs. And I thought that was only administratively and job, but it looks like it was also political.
Yeah, but surely then if they mustn't be touched, they must still apply for amnesty.
Yes.
They must still come and account so that then it can be decided there and then whether they get amnesty or not.
Exactly.
Which is supposed to trump which, though? Sunset clause or TRC
or
findings?
TRC. The TRC is supposed to trump because, and the TRC is not saying they are guilty or they are wrong. It's simply saying if you know you are guilty and you concede, ask for amnesty, we'll check whether you deserve it or not. If you don't, let's go the prosecuting route. And why would we do that? According to Anton Ackerman's statement, and again, it's a white person who was an old apartheid era prosecutor speaking on behalf of black people. And I'm putting race into it. That's how ironic that an old white person is talking on our behalf, because it's us, it's black people who suffers the atrocities of apartheid. It's not white people.
Yes.
But it's said that it had to take him to come with bold statements. We can't downplay them. President Mbeki, I think he must respond to this.
But do you think he will concede and say that, Anton is right?
Have you ever seen politicians conceding to anything? I don't think he will concede. Knowing President Mbeki is going to respond to this, but not to concede. He will have to find an explanation somewhere. And you see, if this would have happened at the beginning, 94, 95, I would understand to say Madiba maybe would have said it was too volatile at that time to can prosecute those people. Because mostly we're Afrikaner people.
Yes.
If I would understand, I don't say it's right, but I would understand. But this is way beyond into 2002, 2003, 2004. You know, Anton Ackerman, in his statement that I read, says to the Kapembe Commission, South Africans did not even pay attention because on the State of the Nation address of 2003, President Mbeki, on the first part of the statement, he spoke about how these people should face the music of the TRC. On the same statement below, and he says we must go back and read the statement, and I went to do that. Below, he actually changed his own weights. You could see he's thwarting what he said on top. And he goes further as a prosecutor. You know, lawyers write better. And he goes further and say, what President Mbeki said on that statement in 2003 was actually implemented backdoor. That's why he's calling it a Machiavelli's, Prince Machiavelli's strategy. In 2005, they changed the Prosecution Act. The National Prosecuting Authority Act, it was changed. And he's alleging that, and let me call it an allegation because I haven't compared the two, that the 2005 new act of the NPA, it actually gave a leeway for these prosecutions of the TRC people for not to be prosecuted. So what the President Mbeki administration did, according to Ackerman, did, they actually legalized not prosecuting the perpetrators of the apartheid regime. They legalized it. That's why the NPA was not in a position to can do that, because they've inserted clauses in the NPA Act in 2005.
Sure.
And I don't think one should blame President Mbeki solely, but he was the head of state, he must account. But I think there were quite a number of people who were involved. And I'll be very happy as a South African, actually, to have President Mbeki to come and explain to us what actually happened. He owe us that explanation.
Sure.
Yeah.
And we shall try and get him.
Yo, good luck.
Another deadly building collapse in South Africa, this time in Johannesburg. And some people are saying they're surprised. Other people are saying, we're not surprised. And there's a lot of buildings springing up everywhere, but if no one is inspecting as to whether you are complying with bylaws, you're building in the right place, etc., all that's going to happen is even more tragedy.
Fresh, you know what's said about these collapsing buildings? The worst being that one in the Western Cape where over 30, almost 40 people
in George, perished. Yes.
In George, yes. It's the loss of life, you understand? And for what? There's three things that are happening here. Government officials are not doing their job, or they are being bribed not to do their job. The second thing is greed. These contractors, these engineers, these developers, whatever you call them, they are cutting corners in order to make more money. And I think it's greed, only greed. They behave like they are politicians, you know. Only greed can make a human being do such, not to comply. The third thing is non-compliance. Why, if there are laws in the country, you are in the business of building or erecting buildings? And South Africa is very well known to be very good in construction. We are one of the leading countries in the world with construction. Look at the buildings, architectural styles that we have in the country. Look at skyscrapers we have in the country. The buildings, from whether it's stadiums, whether it's residential, whether it's commercial buildings that we have erected as a nation over the years. And people still want to destroy that legacy that we have as a nation to have one of the best. We are the leading country in Africa with infrastructure. And it is this kind of people who are cutting corners, who are greedy, who don't want to comply with the rules that are causing this. And it's loss of life. Now, almost 9-10 people perished in the collapse of the building in Joburg. But I have a problem, Fresh, that there's a very huge double-story building that is being constructed in the city center of Johannesburg.
Under a power line.
That is the first thing. The first thing is, I know nothing about engineering, but I knew, because I've built a house, that you can't build under a power line. You can't build where there's dolomite. You can't build where there's ABCDE. You can't, unless you get special permission, special engineers come and things implemented. Under a power line, no plans. They didn't even say the plans were disapproved.
Yes.
The plans were never presented to the municipality. There's no records.
Do you think there's audacity because people know they can get away with it?
I think
That there will be no consequences. Even if it collapsed and people died, I can get away with it.
And I think the constructors of that building, they must not only be charged with non-compliance of municipal bylaws. They should be charged with murder, because it is because of their action that people died. I listened to a lady who's the CEO of the counter agency of NHBRC, the National Home Builders Council, saying records are demonstrating, and even from interviews of the people who were on site, that there was an engineer on site on a regular basis. The constructor was on site on a regular basis. The developer was on site on a regular basis. Now, these are three professionals who are governed by legislation and bodies. How are you an engineer? You go and oversee a structure of a building plan that's not approved. Because when you are being outsourced as an engineer to come and oversee from engineering side the construction of a structure, one of the very first things you will ask for from the developer, the contractor, the builder, it will be, where are the approved plans? What kind of a registered engineer would allow to go on with work without approved things? So this is very sad. People's lives are lost. Municipal officials, you won't tell me that it's been reported that the city of Joburg has only 46 civil engineers or building inspectors. It's not a lot. It's too little when you look at the population of Joburg. It's very little to have only 46. But if you're in the city center, we're not talking about a remote township or the rural part of Joburg. We're talking in the city center under the noses of the provincial government and the municipality. And none of them pick this up. No politician, no municipal employee, no inspector, no other companies that have interest. If somebody builds next to your house or your business, it is also of your interest that they are doing the right thing because it may impact on you. So nobody in Joburg and Boysens, where this thing took place, picked up and questioned what is happening there, what is being built. Now we are sitting with families that have lost loved ones from as far as KZN, as far as Lesotho. People have died. And as you said, Fresh, there will be no consequences. They probably are going to, because there are rich people who are built, they're going to bribe their way out of this case. We still haven't heard who is being prosecuted on the building that collapsed in George last year.
Yes.
We haven't heard. We haven't heard of the case.
The
Minister of Housing or Human Settlements was there almost every week. There's a report, investigative report that went out. Where are the perpetrators? Where are the people who broke the law?
Tell me, when there's a construction site and there's a massive board talking about this is the project, these are the engineers, the construction company,
the developer, and
etc.
They even give contact numbers.
What is the role of the board? And what does it say when there's a massive construction site but no board?
The role of the board actually is to address what I initially talked about.
Yes.
To say passerbys, neighbors, whoever has interest in that building could be able to look at the numbers to say the engineer, and when you think they're not doing the right thing, you can pick up the phone or email and say, I'm a neighbor, or I'm a passerby, or I'm an engineer from the municipality, or an inspector.
Yes.
I don't have on records in the municipality the construction of this building. I'm therefore making contact as a civil servant.
Yes.
Because I found the numbers on the board. That's the purpose. Sometimes it's not inspectors. It's, like I said, neighboring buildings or somebody who may have interest in that building. Maybe I'm in the business of renting out properties or buying properties and I'm interested in purchasing there. I will have the telephone number or the name of the developer. And in this instance, apparently, that board was not even there, Fresh. So construction of a two-story building was up to the roof level, and nobody ever said, but who's building what in those premises?
Yes.
In that property, you know that it was already the roof size. What collapsed is the slab of, you know, when you build a double story, the slab of the first floor is the one that collapsed. So these people were already putting a roof. Imagine if that was a factory or even a residential place that was being erected there and families were living there or people were working in that building. How many more people would have died if it would have collapsed after construction? And most probably, you know what these people do? Because you need services. Where did they get water to build?
Yeah.
Where did they get electricity to build? Because you need those two things to construct. You need water.
Yeah.
Second, you need electricity. Where did they get those things from? To erect and or construct that building to that level,
sure.
That the municipality could not pick up. Was it illegal connection? How were they giving water and electricity? Did they have a municipal account? Those are some of the things where politicians in Joburg and authorities, this is where the Kenny Kunenes, the mayor, Dada Moreros, and the Dr. Ntini Chuagwe and the speaker must come up and answer to us.
Yes.
Where were they when these things happen? And we owe respect to the poor people of this country who are looking for jobs, who are working in construction sites, who are working with electricity and water, that they should die and probably without insurance, or the insurance will refuse to pay. You know, when you construct, you have insurance for the laborers, the workers. They probably didn't have it. Or if they have it, the insurance will say the construction guy did not comply with the regulations, therefore we are not paying the deceased families. So this thing is bigger than just a building that collapsed and killed about 10 people. It's bigger than that.
Absolutely.
But it's sad. May the souls of those, you know, men and women, if they are women, they rest in peace. But the families must hunt government and the constructors to their last cents. They must do that.
Sure.
I'm angry.
I don't blame you, especially because we love acting surprised when tragedy hits, but the tragedy was unavoidable had there been some sort of enforcement.
Let's enforce the law.
Yeah. Absolutely. There's a DA minister who's been hauled over the coals because he traveled to America with his partner.
To Brazil. Oh, yeah, it's America.
Yes, traveled to South America with his partner. Let's talk about this, because you looked at the situation there. And what did you find?
Well, my find is the media is making halabaloo out of nothing.
Okay.
And
as our Action SA, then, is what you're implying. Because Action SA are the ones who are complaining.
Who took that up. Yes, Action SA and the media ran with it.
Yes.
I don't know if Action SA took this up because of the amount of money that was spent on this trip, and I'll get to that. Or was it a political play? Because the Democratic Alliance, and I think Action SA, I think they're bringing this up because the leader, Mr. Herman Mashaba, having been part of the DA before, despite the ministerial handbook, the Democratic Alliance, I've learned internally, they've got limitations. In or when they were still in opposition, before they were in government, they created a limitation of if they are in government or in parliament, if they travel, what must be their spending. So they were doing that in order to show that they are a disciplined opposition party, which I think they forgot to amend and change when they climbed into the gravy train.
Mm.
But I also think there is some level of what you call it, not xenophobia, of homophobia that is happening, because Minister Dion, what is his surname? The Minister of...
Dion George.
Dion, is it George? Hmm? No, man.
McPherson. Well, Dean McPherson.
Dean McPherson. Yes. Is a gay person, his partner is gay.
Mm.
So this whole story in the social media, it focused on, he's even a gay partner, as if gay partners cannot be spouses. They can be spouses. It's constitutional.
And I think whether the person is gay or not is neither here nor there.
It's none of our business.
It should not inform your opinion.
Exactly. It should not inform our opinion as a nation, because constitutionally they are well within their rights. But let me explain from the civil service and the ministerial handbook.
Yes.
Spending, and if that figure is correct, of 839,000 for a trip of few days or a week to Brazil to attend the official meeting, it's not a lot of money, because it is not the minister and the partner who spent that amount on traveling, hotel, and S&T, foreign S&T allowance, which is in dollars probably. It is the total cost of the trip of the ministerial entourage, the PA, the secretary, the advisors, special envoys, whoever the minister traveled with.
Mm.
That figure of 839, it's not a lot. Having been in the public service, I can tell you. That's one. Secondly, the ministerial handbook of the cabinet or the executive authority of South Africa allows all ministers at least one trip with your spouse on an official trip abroad. You can take your spouse with it. It allows them. In one financial year, 1st of April until 31st of March the following year, every minister is allowed one trip with a spouse. I'm short. It's in the ministerial handbook. Except I've learned Minister of DERCO, Department of International Relations and Cooperation, Minister Lamola, is allowed more because of the nature of his duties.
His work, yes.
And most of the time he will be abroad, so he can take his spouse more. That's the first part we must cross. But digging deeper into this, I realized that the attacks did not only come, the questioning came from Action SA and the media, but the attack on Dean McPherson came from inside the DA.
Do you think it's part of the internal back and forths?
More and more, the Democratic Alliance, because they now have factions and they are now in government. It's now starting to show more and more that they actually have factions and internal squabbles inside. I've noticed how Helen Zille, as the federal chairperson of the TA, was defending Mr. Dean McPherson. But there are other people inside the TA who leaked this information, who actually activated it in the media by saying, yes, the ministerial handbook may say this, but our internal policy inside the TA says something different. So he is required to therefore respect the policy of the political party that deployed him first before the national policy. Because you know what is he doing? Parties like Action SA and the EFF, for example, maybe Umkhonto Wesizwe to some extent, they are saying, and if you look at the three parties, they are in the opposition benches.
Yeah.
They are saying, look at the DA, that was of critical of the gravy train of saying these people are living luxury, they're wasting money. They are now in and doing the same against their even own policy. Now, I don't think EFF, Action SA, and M Controversies went to read the DA policy. The only logical thing is that those that are in the opposing faction of Dean McPherson, they leaked that information to say, no. The money spent, it's above the threshold that we as a party have set for our ministers. Mm. But like I said, there's nothing unbecoming out of it except politics.
Sure.
They made a mistake by not changing the threshold. They did that policy when they were the opposition, when they were not in the executive authority. They were in parliament.
Mm.
And to say, as an MP, if you travel, because MPs do travel on study trips abroad, study tours, and whatever, they do travel. They forgot to change their threshold when they joined the government of national unity and they are members of the executive. I mean, they've got about 8 people serving in the executive.
Yes.
And I also think there's also political professional jealousy.
Mm.
You know, they're human beings.
That you're on the train now.
Yeah, you're on the train now. You forgot what the party is saying. I think there's that professional jealousy. But yes, people must desist to critique without reading what the laws and the policies say.
Mm.
Secondly, guys, let's leave the LGBTIQS community to enjoy their own life. It's their choices, whether we agree with that or not. It's their choice.
Mm.
It is. If I believe it's immoral, that's my problem.
Sure.
If you believe the state should not be funding that Ongelapi, where do you fit there?
Mm.
It is not illegal and it is not for us to judge.
Sure.
The Constitution makes provision for that.
Mm. While we're talking about the DA, right on time and on schedule, the DA have taken advantage of the Premier Panyaza Lesufi comment about the fact that all of us don't have water. Sometimes I even have to go to a hotel.
Yeah.
And obviously he was trying to illustrate the fact that it's affecting all of us.
All of us, yes.
That sometimes that's what I need to do. But unfortunately the optics of it imply that, but because I can afford a hotel, I'll be better off than everyone else. But, you know, I think a lot of us generally understood what he meant.
Yeah.
But it's unfortunate that the optics don't allow. When you're reading the room, a statement like that will never make it. So now the DA have a billboard that they unveiled a day or two ago that says the ANC showers in hotels while you don't have water. And then it shows Panyaza in a suit. He's wearing a shirt and a tie.
Yes.
And the SACP have called it cheap politicking. I think COSATU in Johannesburg have also called it out.
Mm.
But I'm thinking it's election season. And if anyone is going to do something like this, it's the DA.
And it doesn't stop other parties from doing that.
Yes.
You understand? And I think they became a little bit decent by making him shower in a tie and a shirt.
Yes.
Because then it would have caused an uproar you don't shower in clothes.
Yes.
You understand? If they would have created a picture of him naked or semi-naked. But I won't forgive the DA for this. Can they take that bot and bring it to Joburg? Why in our Tshwane, where Nasi Pumoya is doing a good job, why in the capital? Bring it to Joburg, man. It's you guys who have problems with water and meat rent and all that. Or put it in the border of Tshwane and Gauteng. You know, meat rent is the border. But the optics.
Yes.
I think DA, knowing them, they took advantage of this thing. As you said, Fresh, it's an election season.
Yes.
They're taking advantage of that. It is the truth that the country and the province is faced with water crisis. That's not a lie.
Mm.
It's affecting all of us. And Mr. Lusufi, as the premier of Gauteng, is on the forefront of saying, under your leadership, Gauteng has the taps are dry.
Mm.
Wrong or right, optics or not, cheap politicking. What is expensive politicking? I will ask COSATU if I was DA. I will ask COSATU and the ANC, what is expensive politicking?
Mm.
And they are talking the language that a human being on the street, and they have money to put billboards. I'm told it's very expensive to put a billboard, but it's a very, very good and strategic publicity stunt or marketing strategy that to people who believe in adverts and who are convinced by adverts, it will linger in their heads towards the elections. You know, to say, this is the premier and the man we had voted into power. When we run out of water, he goes and shower in the hotel.
Mm.
That's the game that politicians play.
Sure.
And it's unfortunate, but again, politicians, learn to use your spokesperson.
And I think also in a climate like this, don't give other parties low-hanging fruit to can use against you.
Yes.
Because that's what's going to happen. It's the season where you can't afford to have your foot in your mouth.
Exactly.
You can't afford to misstep. You can't afford to become a political campaign fodder.
Yes.
Because of things you said or didn't say.
You have to stay focused if you want to win the hearts of the voters.
Absolutely. MK Party reaching out to the ANC in KZN. What's happening there?
Hi, Fresh. What do I say? I think it's too late for MKP.
Yes.
They've approached, remember, Umkhonto we Sizwe Party, led by President Zuma, is the leading party in KwaZulu-Natal politics, the province.
Yes.
They've got 45% during the last elections in 2024.
Mm.
Logically, they should have formed the government. Mm. Like the ANC took a lead in the national government to say, we have 40%, 39.8%, average 40% as the national leader. The next party was the Democratic Alliance with about 23%.
Mm.
We will therefore lead in forming the government. They had an option to form a minority government or a coalition government, and the ANC did that nationally. Umkhonto we Sizwe Party had that opportunity.
Mm.
They were overtaken by the ANC, which followed them with votes far less than their 45%, that rallied other political parties to say, let us go to bed together in order to make sure that Umkhonto we Sizwe does not leave. So they overtook them.
Mm.
Umkhonto we Sizwe should have done that. They should have approached the Inkatha Freedom Party, the National Freedom Party, and all other small to say, let's form a government. And they failed to do that. And remember what happened that time. Umkhonto we Sizwe Party said at that time, they will not work with the ANC of Ramaphosa.
Mm.
Now, they woke up almost 3 years after the government is formed, because the government was formed around June, July 2024. And they approached the ANC to say, let's talk. Because they've tried twice already to unseat the current government of provincial unity in KZN.
Yes.
They've tried, led by the ANC, then it has Democratic Alliance, Inkatha Freedom Party, and the National Freedom Party. The National Freedom Party has one seat, and that one seat, they are kingmakers.
Mm.
They've tried twice to convince them to put a motion of no confidence in the current leadership of the premier, who comes from, I think, Inkatha Freedom Party or the ANC, to remove them from power so that Umkhonto we Sizwe can use the National Freedom Party seat. They because of the number of seats in the province, they have failed, and now they are approaching the ANC. Again, I listened to Mr. Nhlamulo, the spokesperson the spokesperson of Umkhonto we Sizwe Party, saying, no, they haven't changed the position. Their statement didn't make sense to me. You said it in 2024. You are saying it now. The ANC says they are a central command control party.
Yes.
Where the president of the party, in order to engage, they will.
We are a collective.
Yes, they work collectively. So they are not at this stage going to convince the ANC if they want to exclude Ntate Ramaphosa. But I think also this may be a political strategy whereby they want to create an atmosphere to the constituency of the voters in KZN to say, you see, we tried even towards the local elections. We tried to even work with them.
Mm.
They are refusing. I think that they are playing into the calam.
So Ramaphosa, it's a year later. Ramaphosa is out of the picture, or 2 years later.
Mm.
Ramaphosa is out of the picture. And the MKP say to the ANC, let's work together.
Mm.
Do you think the ANC should agree to work with them?
At that time, I think it's going to be, because right now there's this male egos of the president who replaced each other. You know, historically, Fresh, if you look at it, until today, President Mbeki and President Zuma, they can't drink from one cup because one removed another one from power.
Yes.
The same thing is happening. President Ramaphosa removed President Zuma from power. What can I call it when there's
no, but did they remove them from power, or did the collective decide to recall the one?
Yeah, but the collective led by who? You understand? They, that's, and they see it that way.
But can they veto the collective? Let's say President Ramaphosa did not agree.
Yeah.
That President Zuma must be recalled.
Yeah.
Do you think you could have vetoed the decision?
I don't think so, because even during the President Zuma likes to talk about it, that when people wanted to recall President Mbeki, he speaks a lot. Even other people like the former Premier of Mpumalanga, Mathews Poso, who was the Treasurer General, they said actually one of the people who was refusing that President Mbeki be recalled, it was President Zuma. So they couldn't veto the collective and the majority decision of the NEC, because the NEC makes that decision, which is the highest decision-making body in the ANC. The problem here is, after you were asking me a question, come 2029, will they? I think they would. I'll tell you why they would work together. I don't rule out that these two political parties, including the EFF and COSATU and the SACP, we may wake up one day and see them reunited. I'll tell you why. Once you have punished a person, once they have lost enough votes to all the breakaway parties, and it is young, fresh minds who have come up to lead, they will start talking to each other. I think in that scenario, when Mbeki, Zuma, Ramaphosa are no longer there, you find yourself with the Ndlelas, the Mulefes, and the Mbalulas, and the Malemas only, and including the former Youth League leader, who's the former Minister of Finance, what is his name, Gigaba. If it's that generation, I see them being able to sit down and say, comrades, those Madalas misled us. Let us sit down and talk, because some of them are still comrades, some are still friends. You understand? I see them, in order to save the face of the ANC historically, doing that. But let me tell you, that move will not convince the voters. The people are already tired, and it is going to be a mammoth of a task that any other leadership of the ANC is going to be able to convince the electorate to bring them back to power. I don't see that happening. But I see them talking in future. And they will not be talking because it's a good thing, or they are good people, or they've learned a lesson. They will be talking because they would have lost power, they would have lost votes, and they will be weak. So they will be talking from a weakened position, which is not a good thing. You must negotiate, engage, and build a very strong foundation and walls when you are having power, not when you are weakened, because it's too late, you know, at that time. Yes. But the attempt of controversy in KZN, and going back to the topic at hand, I think it is to more to expose the ANC and show the electorate that the ANC does not have your interest at heart, than to want to form government. Because if they were desperate to form government, they will stop with this statement of, we don't want ANC of Ramaphosa. It wouldn't be, because that was the problem, actually. It's not to say they didn't want to work together. I mean, this the percentage that the ANC lost in national is the percentage that the Mkhonto gained. The percentage that the ANC lost in KZN, it went to everything, DA, EFF, ANC, the percentage they lost in KZN, it went to Mkhonto Wesizwe party. And that's what I'm saying. I don't think it's about, if they were desperate, they will say, guys, we've got 45 here. We can, only the two of them can run the province.
Given the musical chairs that are happening with the MKP, people getting fired or redeployed, etc., do you think those musical chairs are doing them any favors among some of maybe the supporters who were not too sure if they're staying or not?
I don't think that, I don't think it's helping the organization. This is the youngest political party in the country, led by a former president, you know, and they had gathered a highly influential political people. If you look at Andile Mkhitamas, Tony Yengeni, Brian Molefe, Colin Makubela, some are not even from the ANC. So they've managed to gather a number of prominent politicians in the country to build that party. And Dr. Hlophe, you know, you can mention quite a number of people. And to be now failing with that creme de la creme of politics, most of them, they don't even have scandals in their name. I mean, we look at Nhlamulo Ndlela. He has never been a politician. Now, to fail to use those assets of warm bodies to solidify the party, people are in and out of the door for whatever reason. I don't think it's helping the organization. Both on, what did you say? their members, their supporters, and the prospective voters that they would have heard. Because people have been saying, when you ask them, why are you not voting alternatively and vote the ANC out? One of the biggest answers you get in political circles is people saying, there's no alternative. Umkhonto weSizwe had positioned themselves very well to be the alternative. One, they should have wrestled, KwaZulu-Natal, and deliver there. You understand? Then people are going to say, look, the good work they've done in KZN.
Yes.
Two, they would have not allowed, because they've got the numbers. They may not have the experience, but they would have not allowed the EFF to continue as if EFF is the official opposition in parliament. Because when you look at what EFF is doing in parliament on or opposition benches, you will think that they are the official opposition. You will think that they are more than the Umkhonto. Umkhonto has more than half of MPs than EFF. The only thing that EFF MPs have,
yes,
that the majority of Umkhonto MPs does not have, is the experience of being in parliament. But they should have learned quickly and use their numbers to show that they're in the opposition. These three things would have done very well for them, but they are failing dismally to take advantage of their numbers, their experience, their powers, and the fact that they would have been governing KwaZulu-Natal.
Sure.
We'll be sitting with two provinces, the Western Cape and KZN, that are not in the hands of the ANC.
Sure.
And they failed to do that. And I think it's going to work to their disadvantage. Look what the DA. The DA is winning people's minds by saying, we have been running the Western Cape very well. Even where they lie.
Yes.
But they've done that. That's why they continue to keep Western Cape for so many years. They will be rattled by a patriotic alliance in local elections. They're going to rattle them. The formation of or the unification of the three parties, the Good Party, Bosa, and Songhezi's party, I always forget the name.
Rise Mzansi.
These three coming up, it's also going to have impact on more on the DA and lesser on other parties.
Yes.
So Umkhonto weSizwe failed to can read the room and understand the political playground.
Do you think they are going to suffer similar fate as did COPE? Because COPE year one came in at 30 seats in parliament.
Yes.
30. Before you knew it, they were down to 2.
Yes.
And then 0.
Yeah. I doubt if they will go that route.
Okay.
I doubt. The bigger thing with COPE, it was their own internal factions.
Yes, they ate themselves, out of the competition. Yes.
While Umkhonto weSizwe, I think that command and control from one point, it's killing factionalism. So if you are not for command and control, you're out.
You're in the wrong party.
Yeah. So yes. I think it's aiding them. I don't think they will die like COPE. I don't even think they will reduce their percentage heavily. They're going to be more like EFF. They will either stay on that percentage of 15 nationally, 45 KZN, and they will stay there. If they drop, they will drop with a percentage, half a percentage, or they will go up.
Yes, sir.
I think that's what is going to happen. But if they continue, that will happen if they continue with this behavior, the childish behavior of a toddler. They must change the behavioral patterns of running a political party. Then they may grow.
Sure.
You always talk about take the low-hanging fruits.
Yes.
Grab them, run with them, demonstrate what you can do. Little things. And PA, led by Katie McKenzie, they're doing it good.
Yes.
They're going for low-hanging fruits and they shine and they make noise. I mean, look at your minister. Has made all football fans happy.
Yes.
You know, there are football fans who will now vote for Gaydin McKenzie.
Yes.
For introducing VAR.
Absolutely.
Helen Zille goes to a Soweto derby game. Where? In the township.
Yes.
In a Shabin, where is Orlando Pirates?
Low hanging fruit.
I'm telling you, there are Pirates supporters who are not interested in politics, who will say, ah, Gogo Helen Zille is a killer bagabag. We are going to vote for the D. That's how politics run. Philosophies, manifestos, good English, it's not going to deliver voters.
Appeal to my emotions.
Appeal to the people's emotions.
And give me a sense of you almost care about me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that's how politics work.
We need to wrap it up, but we cannot go to the Gulf.
Oh, yes.
Trump has been threatening that Iran, watch out. There were negotiations happening, and mid negotiations, all of a sudden, bombs were dropping all over Iran. Iran decided, oh, okay, are we fighting now? And obviously, there have been retaliatory strikes. And Iran, like anyone else who are fighting for their lives and exercising their right to self-defense, would obviously attack any other region or country or place that is giving the person attacking them some sort of platform or launch pad. So as much as I am personally against war, I don't think war makes sense. To go to war for peace, for me, defeats the whole purpose of peace in the first place. And I'm not in any way saying that Iran are the bastions of human rights or being nice. But they're a sovereign state.
And
they have a right to exist until that people decide we've had enough and do what they need to do to show that they've had enough. But now for you to bomb them and say it was a preemptive strike, and that you are there to free the people of it. Unfortunately, and I think it was Sir Keir Starmer who said, you can't affect regime change from the air. And secondly, does Iran have enough structures on the ground that they would know what to do when there's a vacuum like this? Because more often than not, a vacuum like this just leaves space for other fringe
for chaos.
Lunatics
yes.
to fill that void. We saw it in Iraq.
We saw it in Afghanistan.
Yes.
Afghanistan gave America Osama bin Laden. Then they killed him because he was on their side when they were fighting the Talibans. We saw it in Iraq when during the 1980 to 1988 war between Iraq and Iran, who was supporting Saddam Hussein of Iraq to attack and kill.
Who propped him up?
Who propped him up? It was the Americans. We saw it in Libya. Libya is in from being the wealthiest country with social, you know, services to the people in the continent. Look at Libya today, because after they had one of the greatest leaders of the world, Colonel Muammar Gaddafi, Americans went and told the Libyans that Gaddafi is a dictator, he's a very bad person, must remove him by all means and necessary out of power. What did they do? They started creating factions and what you call cults and tribalist groups inside Libya in order to remove Gaddafi out of power. What did they do to all those people? Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein and Colonel Gaddafi. What did they do to them? They killed them, and there was a vacuum. More, as we said, either a lunatic or a more radical person will occupy the position. So you cannot leave a country, as we said, on the ground. Did you do your homework? Who do you want to put? Will the people be acceptable? Because this was all the regime change about this whole thing. But, you know, I read a lot because this war happened while we were on air last week, Saturday, and we woke up on Sunday. America has bombed Iran. And we've been saying it's coming. Trump is going to do it.
Yes.
Israel is going to do it. I mean, the first shot, they used almost 45 jets from Israel and about 22 jets from America all at the same time to bomb Iran. What is a sovereign state? They didn't start any war. They didn't aggress anything. The International Atomic Agency, what? They've already written to say there is no sign or evidence that Iran has stockpiled.
And there have been countless inspections.
They've allowed inspections for over the years that they are not producing any nuclear weapons. Whatever nuclear and uranium they use is for generating electricity. And even if they do, it's a sovereign state. They have a right to defend themselves against an aggressor like Israel, an aggressor like the United States. They have a right to do that. That's one. Two, I think these are economic wars. When I read, I'll tell you where is this going. China and Iran are going to be the biggest loser here. America will lose in a long time. But this war is actually, you know, Trump may be a lunatic, what person. But with this war, he is actually backing up the trade war that he has been planning there. What do you call it? The tariffs war. He realized that the tariff war did not work. There's three things that he's doing there. One is because of the tariffs war. And I'll explain that. Two is because of the Epstein files. He's trying to divert attention because he's featuring there and his friends on the Epstein files. 3, it is the midterm elections that are due coming up in November, in America. So he didn't do well in the time. The Epstein files and the midterm is trying to distract the Americans and the world so that he must not be prosecuted or be voted out. That's what he's trying to do, which I think with the midterm, he's going to fail if Iran drags this war longer.
Do you think they underestimated Iraq's ability to push back?
They underestimated that they thought Iran will fall into chaos when they kill the Iranian supreme leader, Ayatollah Khomeini. They thought so. Big mistake. The country is still holding on. I think they underestimated the defense system and the attack with drones and missiles of Iran. I think they underestimated. They thought, because they said they planned 4 weeks, 1 week now. Iran is still moving, is still attacking. The second thing that they did wrong was to forget or to never think that Iran will hit their neighboring countries, which are accommodating American military personnel. Because without those neighboring countries, so what Iran is saying is that we're extending this to everybody who's impacted.
No, but also, Busan, if you are abusing me and then you go to my neighbor and you abuse me from my neighbor's house and my neighbor does nothing about it or they enable you, why should I not be able to say, okay, so my neighbor is with you and are therefore also the enemy?
Yes, yes. For example, Bahrain, Kuwait, United Arab Emirates, and what is the fourth one? That's four of them that are actual neighbors of Iran and have access to the Gulf, the Persian Gulf, as well as the most important part. This is where trade comes in. China is the world's biggest consumer of oil because of their mass production. Now, this is where it becomes a trade war. When Trump tried to fight with the tariffs, all countries pushed back. Even those that went to negotiate with him, they were like, they showed him a middle finger, including South Africa. Said, you know what? You can impose your tariffs.
Yes.
China retaliated economically. When America said 30%, they said 60. When America said 60, they said 100. We don't care. Now, the next thing to do was to choke China economically. China's oil from Iran through the Strait of,
Hormuz.
It's getting 40% of their oil from there. You understand? So, to start this war, they knew that Iran will choke the Strait of Hormuz. That's why President Trump had said to those transporting vessels that are transporting oil and goods out of the Strait of Hormuz, Trump had said they will provide military
escorts.
And I'm glad these countries didn't fall for that trap, because Iran, it was going to be very easy for Iran to do that. So China is being choked economically because of the import of oil. Their alternative oil used to be from where? From Venezuela.
I was going
to
say, are you saying that is why Venezuela had to be hit first?
Yes.
Because now Venezuelan oil all of a sudden is flowing to the Gulf.
Yes.
Via Qatar.
And it's longer. It's more expensive now to transport things. The benefactors of this war economically, for now, it's South Africa, Mozambique, and Namibia, for now. Because now these vessels have to take the alternative route of the Suez Canal
and then
route to the Cape of Good Hope.
Yes.
For now, we are benefactors. Please, they must not come and bomb these vessels on our waters. But how are we benefactors? Because of the stop stations, refueling stations, and all that. So we'll benefit, and docking, because we charge for docking, for refueling, even if they don't offload there. Some countries will offload there and use road to transport goods. So South Africa is going to technically benefit for now. If this war goes on for a long time, we're going to see a surge in oil prices and other goods which are relying, like consumers are going to suffer.
And for the whole value chain.
So it's America responding to China and Europe. Europe won't suffer much regarding the movement of oil. And that's why Iran is attacking these countries. But thumbs up and salute to the Iranians. They are fighting under a very clear military rule that you do not attack civilians. They are bombing American properties, like their consulates, their army bases. They are not bombing hospitals and schools. one of the very first strikes that Israel hit Iran with last weekend was a missile that killed about 165 school children in a school in Iran. And it's going to be very difficult because Iran is in a position to can actually shut down the Hormuz Strait or Strait of Hormuz. If they shut that down, the world is in a mess.
You know, you hear people arguing that, yeah, but Iran have been sponsoring fringe terrorist groups, they're sponsors of terrorism in the region, they keep chanting death to America. And often it's people who have not bothered to look at the history of where death to America comes from.
Yes.
And the fact that America has been interfering in Iran since 1953, when they, through the CIA, had someone who was democratically elected.
Yes.
I think it was Prime Minister Mohammed Mossadegh.
Yes, yes.
He was overthrown.
He was overthrown.
He was overthrown. Why was he overthrown? Because he decided to nationalize Iranian oil and say that our oil is for our people. And like, because that did not work for them, he was overthrown. A Shah was brought in who was not a nice person.
Exactly.
And that's what led to the revolution in the first place.
The Iranian revolution.
So you can't blame people who, all we know of this great USA is that they've meddled in our business time and time again. And I don't condone slogans like death to America. But I am one willing to look at where does it come from?
How did it start?
And why do these people feel like this about another country? Because this country has been meddling in their business since the 50s. What are you to do when all you've known is the chokehold of one country?
And first, a slogan death to America, they didn't go physically out to attack America. They didn't go out to kill Americans in America or anywhere in the world. Even if there are claims that there are terrorist groups supported by Iran, and I'm saying claims carefully, supported by Iran in some of the Persian countries, you know, like Pakistan and so forth. However, you said it very correctly. They enlisted regime change in Iran 47 years back.
Mm.
You understand? And when the Iranians, that's why it's called the Revolutionary Guard, the Iranian Revolution. When the people of Iran woke up, rose and say, we want to put our government and a leader that we want.
Yes.
The majority of them with elections. It's their country. Let them do what they want. You don't go and punish people because you think they are extremists, because you think they are Muslims. You don't go. And you know, I wrote something this week to various groups and said, another thing that people don't know, to say, why are these Arab countries against Iran or not supporting Iran? And I said, by the way, Iran is not an Arab country. They are more Persian than Arabic. And somebody was like, but Butsang, explain it in simple language. And I'm saying, you don't have to be an Arab to be a Muslim. We have Africans, Europeans, Americans, and Asians who are Muslims. There's Muslim practicing or Islam practicing people from all continents of the world. It's a religion. You don't. It's not all Muslims are Arabs. Arabs are a nation, like Africans, like Europeans, like Americans, like Chinese and Jaba. They are a nation. It's Arabs. The Iranians are patient people, and we must go and look at history properly to understand how did they became a patient empire historically, and that's why when others are called the Arab countries of the Gulf, the others are called the Persian countries, because from Iran moving the other side. What is America doing now? And the Israel? There are reports now that they are arming some of the insurgents inside Iran for regime change. And the Kurdish group of people. Mm-hmm. Because what do they want to do? They are saying to the Kurdish group, these ones, they are hating you, they are oppressing you, they don't like you. That is interfering with affairs of a sovereign state and making brother to brother to hate each other. Sure. We know in South Africa that will never happen again on us, that there's white racist people who made sure that they make Zulu people to fight with us or any other nation. We have experienced that and we have treated it as a nation. It's not because Zulu people hate Botswana or Maxhosa. There's nothing like that. And today, let anybody try that in South Africa to divide African black people because of their ethnic nature. And that's what America is doing in Persian Gulf or in the Arab states.
Yeah.
We have Muslims or Islamic countries, actually almost all our North African states, if you look at Morocco, Algeria, Egypt, and what they are Islamic states, Libya, but they don't hate each other internally. And that's why Iran is being seen by the Arab countries as not one of them. Understand? So and America wants to fuel that. These people have been living next to each other peacefully.
Yes.
Until the fight started. What did they do after the Iran-Iraq war, fueled by America, sponsored by America? It ended in 1998. What happened after? Saddam Hussein, who was trained, armed, and propelled to power by the Americans, attacked Kuwait, neighbor. Again, America defended Kuwait. What happened after then? They started looking for a new partner there. I will go for Iran. This has been going on and coming for many years. And the longer this war is going to take place, President Trump said they're estimating, they planned. Imagine you even plan to say 4 to 5 weeks. They even plan for how long they're going to bomb and destroy another country. I think it's going to take longer. I think it's going to take longer.
It's going to be another Iraq mess. It's going to be another Iraq mess. And again, you can't set up military bases around my house and then say you don't feel safe.
Yes.
So you're going to preemptively strike me when you have set up military bases around...
You are not my neighbor. You are not my immediate neighbor.
Exactly.
Both Israel in America, they are not immediate neighbors of Iran. You are there. And you say, I feel unsafe, and you come and set a military base with my neighbors, and my neighbors allow. When the war starts, and they attack first, Iran is retaliating to the attack by Israel and the USA. Now, if I'm under attack, I will go next door first.
Yes.
I'll weaken you.
Where you are launching from where you are is launching where I'm from. Going to attack.
Yes, because these missiles are not coming from the USA or New York or Washington or Pacific Ocean. They are coming from my neighbors.
You know, one thing that actually disturbed me the most over and above all the bombing that's happening was President Trump talking about how Spain are not allowing us to use their bases.
Yeah.
And one statement that for me sums up this man's approach to everything, and probably including relations with women, is what can Spain do? They can't stop us. We will use the bases if we want to. For me, that summed up his approach to everything.
Yeah. That was it for me.
That probably summed up even the accusations in the Epstein files, that if you don't allow me, I will do it anyway.
Yeah. No, but I'll say it for as long as President Trump is in that office. If you vote a lunatic in the office, you will get results of a lunatic. And he is showing that day in, day out. Has absolute no respect for anybody except those that he fears. North Korea, China, and Russia. When Russia lamented that NATO is putting military bases on the borders of Ukraine, and that's why he claims, that's why he took over those neighboring provinces or regions of Ukraine, the whole world stood up and said, but why are we allowing this nonsense?
Yes.
But when America does that, putting military bases on the doorstep of a country like Iran, and even talk, by the way, this doesn't start with Trump. All American presidents, all of them, even the Democrats, have been wanting to attack Iran for many years. It's just that they have a man now who decided, I'll press the button, I'll do it. And I think any normal sovereign state that has enough arms to can defend itself, defend yourself. And that's why when we were all at the radio on Monday and you asked me why was Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khomeini was not in a bunker where he could have saved his life, why was he having meetings, why was he known where to be? And I said, I think it's a martyrdom that the Islamic Revolution people of Iran live in to say, if I am going to die,
I will die with honor.
I will die with honor. And they're undermining that. The Americans, they're undermining that the people of Iran will rather die and lay down their lives in order to succumb and give their country. They would rather take it like they took over Libya, like they took over Iraq, and they've destroyed Palestine.
Sure.
But they are creating more enemies for the U.S. They don't see. This is a long-term thing. Trump will be long dead when the children of America are going to suffer these consequences of this, both economically and militarily.
And I think the moral of the story, and even for any children who might be watching this, is if it's good for the goose, let it be good for the gander.
Yes. Yes, Fresh.
That's the moral of the story.
That's the moral of the story. But the world is troubled. The fact that Iran is attacking other countries, the fact that other countries are affected economically like China, China can run to Venezuela. You see the Trump strategy, whether we like it or not.
Hence, I'm saying, that's why Venezuela had to go first.
You go to Venezuela, China is making relationships with BRICS member states. Iran is a BRICS member state now. I'll capture Venezuela. There's no alternative oil. After that, I will start bombing Iran. There's no oil. And I've choked the economies of the world. That was the strategy and is implementing it. Everybody's going to feel the heat.
We're out of time.
Thank you, Fresh.
Thank you very much, as always, for your time, your insights, and how you see things. If you agree or disagree, please let's fight in the comments. Let's fight with respect. Let's disagree with respect. And let's share our alternative views.
Yeah.
If you have alternative views. Where do we find you online, sir?
Fresh, first of all, where's my biography is here. The viewers, please, orders. There's still books. I want to print the new book. So there's still about 200 copies left. You can order or inbox me on 083-884-777. That's WhatsApp.
Okay, so +2783.
Yes. At +2783-884-7787.
Okay.
For contact, even conversations, or botsangm@gmail.com or @botsangm on social media. So we can reach out there. We can meet there and have engagements and this kind. And thanks for those who have been reaching out and those who have been making contact or comments. Please put the comments there on YouTube, not only to me, because then your ideas are being shared with other people.
Yeah, but you know, some people...
Unless you are a spy.
No, but also a lot of people that watch the show are very, very politically tied up.
Yes.
So
yes.
They can't comment in public.
So
we'll get a lot of those.
Yeah, like a good guy in the South African Parliament who's an employee of Parliament who came to correct us to say, remember last week, we were not sure whether Parliament is open. They're in a new building, renovated. And he corrected us by inboxing me. I said, in the order, man. Write it there in the group to show that we have people who educate us and who help us as well. Because there's nothing wrong when you are an employee of Parliament and say, no, Botsang and Fresh, you wanted an answer. Parliament, we are still on a temporary structure. It's not political. You are helping us.
So they're still in the City Hall.
Yes.
And in the Dome.
And in the Dome, yes. The Dome is the one that's completed.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. And thanks for the correction to one of the viewers.
Thank you, brother.
By one of the viewers.
Thank you, Brother B.
Thanks, Fresh, and thanks to the listeners and the viewers.
It's another episode of Wow, What a Week, #Polytrix, coming to you from Discover TV. Let them be your stage. If you're doing a podcast, you want to shoot a music video, they will look after you. Shout out to our executive producer, Keleso Modisa King, and to Trevor and his crew at Pezulu Works for the cinematography, the editing, all the good stuff. If we look good, it's their fault. If we look bad, it's our fault. So let them make you look good. And thank you for the comments, the sharing that you do. If you're going to subscribe. We appreciate all of that. And every single comment, every single subscription, every single like goes a very long way. Thank you for hanging out with us. We'll do this again next week. Till then, have a wow week in spite of yourselves. We're out of here.